Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is your Calls Media Roundtable. Before we begin today's show, we wanted to let you know that we will be doing a show on Republican efforts to cut funding to NPR and PBS next Friday. You've probably heard that yesterday, 214 House Republicans voted to claw back $1.1 billion from public media. NPR reports that two Republican lawmakers switched their votes from no to yes to push it over the finish line. Four House Republicans voted against the bill, 212 House Democrats voted no, and four did not vote. Approximately 60% of the hundreds of radio and TV stations that could suffer funding cuts are in Trump-won states, according to a congressional report obtained by CBS News from Senate Democrats. According to Victor Picard, associate professor at the University of Pennsylvania's Annenberg School for Communication, the United States federal government allocates about $1.35 per person per year for public broadcasting. That's $1.35. Japan spends over $40 per citizen, the UK about $100, and Norway over $176. We will discuss all of this next Friday. Today, we're discussing coverage of the Trump administration's ongoing ICE raids, and later in the show, we'll talk about their attacks on trans people. First, we'll get to immigration raids. Compared to past administrations, the number of deportations under Trump has not been unusual, but the tactics they are using are unprecedented and possibly illegal, according to experts. Immigrants across the country have been detained and deported without judicial review and some in violation of court orders. Many were later found to be not guilty of any crimes, and now the Trump administration is carrying out large workplace raids, which were largely put on pause by the Biden administration. Photos and videos show ICE agents with their faces covered as they detain immigrants. Many family members whose loved ones were detained last Friday in Los Angeles say they still have no idea where they are. The raids in Los Angeles brought out protesters, and Trump quickly sent in over 2,000 National Guard troops and several hundred Marines. Yesterday, a federal judge ruled against Trump's use of the National Guard in Los Angeles, but a few hours later, the Ninth Circuit paused that order, so the National Guard is still under Trump's control. Also yesterday, California Senator Alex Padilla was handcuffed and forcibly removed from a press conference with Department of Homeland Security Kristi Noem. This clip was taken by one of Senator Padilla's staffers.
Sir, hands up. I'm Senator Alex Padilla. I have questions for the secretary, because the fact of the matter is a half a dozen violent criminals that you're rotating on your
I also want to talk about specifically how many of our ICE agents have been docked or
on the ground. On the ground. Hands behind your back.
If you let my hands go, I'll turn behind my back.
All right. Cool. Okay, one hand. Lay flat.
Other hand, sir. Other hand.
There's no recording allowed out here. I did not know. There's no recording allowed out here per FBI, right? There's no recording allowed out here. That's my boss. There's no recording allowed out here. I'm not a member.
There's no recording allowed.
I understand that, sir, but.
So you can see the video if you search online, and you'll see officers forcing Alex Padilla to the ground and then handcuffing him. And what you're hearing there is a Senator Padilla's staffer is taking the video and someone is telling him that no recording is allowed. Here is California Senator Alex Padilla speaking after he was released.
If this is how this administration responds to a senator with a question, If this is how the Department of Homeland Security responds to a senator with a question, you can only imagine what they're doing to farm workers, to cooks, to day laborers out in the Los Angeles community and throughout California and throughout the country. We will hold this administration accountable.
That was California Senator Alex Padilla. Joining us with the latest is Jeremy Lindenfeld, a reporter and local news fellow at Capital and Main. Jeremy has been covering the protests in Los Angeles. He reports that protesters were met with overwhelming violence from law enforcement. When Jeremy was in Paramount, California, he was hit in the foot by a canister fired by a Border Patrol agent. When he was in downtown LA, he was struck by a foam baton round, multiple pepper balls, and caught in a plume of tear gas. Among the injured were young children and clearly marked journalists who were sent to the hospital after being struck by various weapons. Hi, Jeremy. Thank you for your reporting, and thank you so much for joining us.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, it's obviously been a very intense week for you. What is a foam baton round? This is something I've never heard of.
Yes. So a foam baton round, more commonly known as a rubber bullet.
Okay.
Not exactly made of rubber, but they're sort of large projectiles that are shot out of launchers. Typically, these law enforcement agencies are supposed to shoot them at the ground so that they bounce off, lose some energy before they impact the protesters that they are trying to control. But oftentimes I've seen firsthand that they don't take those protocols and are just shooting at the protesters.
You report that local agencies like the Los Angeles Police Department have not carried out immigration raids, but they have assisted federal agencies in shutting down protests, often in ways that breach crowd control protocols. You write that the LAPD has been recorded targeting journalists with what are called less lethal munitions, advancing on protesters while swinging their batons, and repeatedly trampling with horses a downed protester. Such behavior appears to contradict agency use of force policy, and that requires the use of de-escalation techniques whenever feasible. So give us a sense of what you have seen on the streets and then what you've experienced. I mean, you've been hit with these so-called less lethal munitions.
Yeah, so I've been out reporting on the ground nearly every day since last Friday. I spent something over 20 hours at these demonstrations. And as has been previously reported, most of these, the vast majority, have been peaceful from the protester side, because these are, you know, folks who have seen their fellow community members forcibly abducted from their workplaces. And so they're understandably upset at the people and agencies responsible for carrying out these operations. The isolated incidents of property damage and aggression that have been significantly overrepresented in national coverage, in my experience, only ever happened after these peaceful crowds were engaged with, you know, what is commonly known as less lethal munitions. I spoke to an expert from the Physicians for Human Rights, and they told me that they don't even call them less lethals. They prefer the term crowd control weapons, because as they explained to me, even though they are less lethal than live ammunition, the kinds of weapons that these law enforcement agencies have been deploying, tear gas, pepper balls, rubber bullets, pepper spray, they have all resulted in serious injury and death at previous events.
Right. And you're talking about Dr. Rohini Har, who you interviewed. Dr. Har told you that if she's concerned that if these protests continue and authorities continue to use these, quote, less lethal weapons, that this might result in more injuries or even deaths.
Yeah, that's right. I've covered protests and civil unrest for a very long time, and the use of force isn't something new. But what I will say about these protests and the response to these protests, the very unusual thing that I've experienced the last few days has been the extent and the sheer volume of use of force and crowd control weapons deployed on protesters. I've never seen so much tear gas, so many rubber bullets in my life.
Who ultimately makes these decisions, Jeremy? Because California Governor Gavin Newsom has been so critical of the Trump administration bringing in the National Guard and the military. And just like you said, Governor Newsom has been telling media outlets that the overwhelming majority of the protests have been peaceful. So who makes the decision to increase the tear gas, for example?
Yeah, I am not exactly sure. I think that that is an agency decision. But what I will say is there are local elected officials, for example, Mayor Karen Bass, who instituted a curfew a few days ago in downtown Los Angeles. So folks aren't allowed out after 8 p.m. In downtown L.A. And that has required a sort of increased LAPD presence in the area. And I was there Wednesday, just before curfew was starting, to cover another protest. And you could see that LAPD was out in force. There was possibly more LAPD officers or law enforcement officers in general than there were protesters. The law enforcement presence has been so significant that it honestly is difficult to communicate.
Have you been able to interview anyone at LAPD to find out how decisions are being made and why they're coming out with such force?
No, I have sent them requests for comment, but unfortunately I have not received word back. I hope I'm able to do that because I think that getting their response would be really valuable. But no, I have not been able to get any comment from them thus far.
What has your experience been in the past in trying to get answers from law enforcement authorities?
Yeah, it can be difficult. And I think that it becomes more difficult when there are very frenetic events that last a long time, when public information offices are overwhelmed by requests, because right now, obviously, a lot of eyes are on Los Angeles. So I'm sure that the PIOs are getting a lot of press inquiries. But, they haven't been the most responsive in the past. So it doesn't exactly surprise me that I haven't gotten a response back yet.
The Trump administration told California officials that ICE activities would continue in the Los Angeles area into July. Many more protests are planned, as you've reported. And, experts are very concerned about this. What are you hearing on the ground about what's to come in the coming weeks?
Yeah, so from the protesters' side of things, it doesn't seem like this is slowing down at all. A lot of people in Los Angeles are incredibly animated. As I said earlier, these are folks that have seen their community members abducted, and they are furious at the agencies and people that are doing this. I think that if, as long as these operations go on, we are going to see community pushback. It is notable that over the last few days, the demonstrations have not been as large as they were on Saturday and Sunday. But if I had to guess, I would think that that was more a function of it being the work day or the work week, rather. People aren't always available to come out to these kinds of demonstrations. And that curfew that Mayor Karen Bass has instituted. But with the weekend coming up and those No Kings protests scheduled, not just in Los Angeles, but across the country, I would not be surprised if these demonstrations continue to happen and perhaps even grow.
We are speaking with Jeremy Lindenfeld, a reporter and local news fellow at Capital and Maine. He has been on the ground covering the protests in Los Angeles. When he was in downtown LA, he was struck by pepper balls and he was caught in a plume of tear gas. Young children and clearly marked journalists were injured and sent to the hospital after being struck by various weapons. Jeremy will be with us for about 10 more minutes. So if you have any questions for him about his reporting, what he has seen on the ground in Los Angeles, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255. What are your thoughts about media coverage of what we're seeing in LA and beyond? There's going to be a number of protests across the country, actually in all 50 states, according to the No Kings website. We'll talk more about that in a few minutes. What are your thoughts about what you're seeing play out on the streets of this country? Mass ICE raids, protests, arrests, and then family members. This is also so important. Family members who say that their loved ones were detained last Friday in Los Angeles. They have not heard from them. They still do not know where they are. So what are your thoughts about this? What strikes you about media coverage? You can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. You have a number of videos out, Jeremy, and in one of them, it shows journalists are clearly marked and all of a sudden they're hit. So can you talk about this? Have you seen this before early on in a protest where these journalists are in one area, clearly they've got their microphones, and they're hit by law enforcement?
Yeah. I obviously can't get into the heads of law enforcement agents. But what I will say is the frequency at which I've seen journalists, reporters, photographers, all of which have been clearly identified as such, be injured by law enforcement weapons, signals to me that the precautions that law enforcement agents are taking to avoid injuring such folks is not nearly adequate enough. When on the ground, it sometimes feels as though they do not discriminate between protesters and members of the press, which can make it difficult for us to do our jobs, because not only are we worried about accurately reporting and getting information out to people that we believe is important for people to know, but we're worried about our physical safety and the safety of our colleagues.
Have you seen any National Guard troops or Marines on the ground?
Yes, definitely National Guard. They were guarding the federal building in downtown Los Angeles. But what I will say is the federal troops that have been deployed to Los Angeles are mostly acting, in my experience, in my first-hand reporting, mostly acting as kind of guards to property. The law enforcement agents that are engaging protesters the way that I've captured on video are local agencies like LAPD and LASD.
Well, let's hear from a caller. Let's go to Stephen in San Francisco. Hi, Stephen. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm really disappointed in one sense with the reporting, because we see photographs, videos of people breaking into stores, stealing, cars being lit into flame. And clearly there are opportunists coming in to take advantage of legitimate protests and using it to steal and burn. And I sort of wonder if they've been investigating these people to see if they are part of another movement that wants to create the effect of that the legitimate protesters are really the rioters and the destroyers and the thieves. What though the reporters know about these people who are doing this?
Yeah, that's a great question. Thank you. The LA Times has a piece called Owners of Damaged Downtown LA Businesses Still Support the Protesters, Not Just the Hoodlums. Several said they supported the right to protest. One attributed the damage to, quote, opportunistic hoodlums. So what about that important question from Stephen, Jeremy?
Yeah, I think, as is the case in many kinds of demonstrations we've seen in the past, there are isolated moments of property damage and aggression, like I was saying earlier. These only came about after law enforcement agencies engaged peaceful crowds with dangerous weapons. That is not to say that they didn't happen, that they weren't destructive, but the context of when they happened, I think, is important. And when it comes to the kind of reporting that I've been doing, I'm more interested in understanding the contours of the violence enacted by the state and state agencies, more so than individuals on the ground, because I think part of my job as a reporter is to hold systems accountable. And I think that focusing on individuals who may cause some damage is less effective in minimizing violence than focusing on agencies and the state apparatus that engages in violence.
There are going to be protests in all 50 states tomorrow, according to the No Kings website. It's nokings.org. This is to coincide with Donald Trump's military parade to mark the U.S. Army's 250th anniversary. It's also his 79th birthday. So here's the latest on this. Yesterday, Texas Governor Greg Abbott ordered the deployment of more than 5,000 Texas National Guard troops and 2,000 state police as people take to the streets to protest ICE and Trump's military parade. Governor Greg Abbott tweeted, "Peaceful protesting is legal, but once you cross the line, you will be arrested." He wrote FAFO, which is F around and find out. And then, Jeremy, right when we were going live, I got a link to the CNN clip, and I'm going to play this on my computer, so I hope it comes out okay. This is a CNN clip from what's going on in Florida. Florida Attorney General James Altmaier and law enforcement officials warned that demonstrators could face a forceful response in the state, according to CNN affiliate WESH. So take a listen to this clip.
It's great to be here in the Space Coast. I'm joined by a bunch of leaders that further exemplify why we are not and will never be California.
If you throw a brick, a firebomb, or point a gun at one of our deputies, we will be notifying your family where to collect your remains at, because we will kill you graveyard dead. We're not going to play.
Groups talk about assembling over the weekend. We haven't seen much of that in Florida, but if you do, these guys, the sheriff's office, Colonel Howes, and the team, we are ready across the state.
So there's a clip from what's going on in Florida. We will kill you graveyard dead.
Wow. Wow. I mean, I'm originally from Florida, so very concerning. I think what is most concerning, obviously, violence is dangerous, puts everybody at risk of harm. But in my experience with the indiscriminate nature that law enforcement agencies have deployed violence in the past at protests and demonstrations that I've been in attendance covering, the kind of language that "we will kill you graveyard dead" signals to me a kind of danger that they will not just target and injure the people that may be aggressing, but will perhaps accidentally hit some folks who are not, because that has been the case at protests that I've attended.
What are your thoughts about how far this could go? According to the No Kings website, there will not be protests in Washington, D.C. Trump said that if there are protests, they will crack down very hard. And a number of legal experts have said that this could be a potential for martial law. If a number of people take to the streets, and as we saw in Florida there, that sheriff is warning people, we will kill you. And so experts are concerned about martial law. What are you hearing, Jeremy, from some of the people that you're interviewing about what this might lead to?
Yeah, I mean, people on the ground are very much concerned about that possibility. I know that a federal judge ruled against the deployment of National Guard in California yesterday. That was since, I think, appealed. But folks are very worried about the kind of slippery slope that we might be headed down. I think maybe it's a little too early to talk about martial law, but if things continue the way that they've been continuing, maybe it is a conversation that we should be having. Obviously, the rhetoric that's been coming out has been very concerning. And I think as long as the federal administration continues these kinds of really visible, really brutal tactics, both in immigration enforcement, but also in the quelling of protests against those operations, we're going to see pushback against that.
And before we let you go, Jeremy, we should also mention that people whose loved ones have been detained and arrested last Friday in Los Angeles, a number of families say they're still searching for their loved ones. They still do not know where they are.
I mean that it's just unconscionable. It is so sad. I'm not sure what to say, but I think that the kind of emotional response that many people will have from hearing that should inform folks who are wondering why protests are happening about why they're happening. These are really brutal tactics, and the community members here who support one another are frustrated, devastated at what they're seeing going around them. It feels like LA and the communities that make LA are under attack.
What are you planning to report on in the coming days, Jeremy?
I'll definitely be at those No Kings protests tomorrow. Today, I'm also planning to go out on the ground sometime. I'm not exactly sure when. There's a number of protests that are planned. But yeah, as long as Los Angeles is, you know, home to these ICE operations, I think there's going to be a lot to report on. I'm also doing some reporting on the cost that this is having on LA City with the employment of LAPD forces, but there's a lot to cover.
And I know you've been on the streets and you've been hit by these rubber bullets and caught in a plume of tear gas. Have you had time to just read other reporting just to kind of gauge how this is being covered by major media outlets?
For the first few days, no. I had no idea how it was being covered, but eventually I took Tuesday not off, but just at home. And that is when I had some time to read it over. And it was concerning. A lot of misinformation and a lot of exaggeration about violence from the protester side. But that, again, wasn't very surprising to me.
Hmm. Where are you finding good reporting?
I'm finding good reporting from the journalists on the ground. There's a lot of real-time reporting that is happening that folks should follow on social media, be it from Capital in Maine, be it from LA Public Press. There are some great online journos, independent journalists, Sean Beckel Carmichael, Ben Camacho, Joey Scott. There's a lot of folks online.
Well, Jeremy, thank you so much for your reporting and thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Jeremy Lindenfeld is a reporter and local news fellow at Capital and Main who's been on the streets covering the protests in Los Angeles. When he was in Paramount, he was hit in the foot by a canister fired by a Border Patrol agent. In downtown LA, he was struck by multiple pepper balls and caught in a plume of tear gas. And you can find his reports, also a video that Jeremy put together for Capital and Main. If you go to KALW.org, click news and then your call. We've got an email from Gary who says, in the video of Senator Padilla's confrontation, not one of the many witnesses in attendance will be heard saying anything. Why did no one speak up? Why did no one shout out, hey, that man, the U.S. Senator, is a U.S. Senator Padilla. Take your hands off him. Poor Senator Padilla was abandoned by all. Is the answer because everyone is so afraid of the repressive forces that they remain silent and passive? Thank you for airing this question. Well, thank you for the email, Gary. And Art writes, where can we find reporting on efforts by the California Attorney General's office and about other lawsuits and tactics and strategies against suppression of free speech and free assembly? Well, Jeremy just laid it out there, Art, and we will continue to follow these issues. As I said in the introduction, things are moving so quickly. Yesterday, a federal judge ruled that Trump's use of the National Guard ruled against his use of the guard in L.A. He was supposed to give it over to Newsom by 11 a.m. Pacific time. But then a few hours later last night, the Ninth Circuit paused that order. So the National Guard is still under Trump's control. And we will definitely be covering this story in the weeks and the months to come. So thank you so much for that email. Coming up after a break, we will discuss media coverage of the Republican Party's ongoing war on trans people. This is Your Calls Media Roundtable. We'll be back after this.